From Tobacco Republic in Loomis, California, this is Beyond the Humidor, a cigar podcast for the rest of us, with your host, Greg Perry, Louis Starr, and I am Scott Robinson, with your guest, Larry Marlotte, cigar reviewer Bob Bilesma, Sarah Belt, and tobacconist Craig Perry. Well, I want to welcome you to the next edition of Beyond the Humidor. Sounded like I was calling roll in school, but hey, the more the merrier. Just go around the block and see how everybody's doing this evening. Bob, how are you?
I am fabulous. It would have been nice if the Twins had beaten the Yankees, but, you know, we have to manage our expectations. So having here a nice cigar and beautiful glass of wine, and so I'm having a lovely evening.
Life is life. I like it. Lou, how you doing there?
I'm celebrating the win of the Yankees over the Twins.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but go Yankees.
I can't believe you're saying that either.
Yes, but it's only, you know, it's the game one, right? And so we know how this is going to play out, or we don't. It'd be interesting, but I'm having a wonderful time. You know, the evening's turning out to be real well, and I'm about to light up a wonderful cigar. At least I hope it's a wonderful cigar, and I'm having a nice adult beverage.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Here's the hoping. And then we got Larry over there looking like the Unabomber. How you doing there, Unabomber?
Padres aren't still in this, I guess, huh? I guess that's a no. I'm good. You know, winding down the week. Nice cigar. Mild, you know, kind of Connecticut tonight. And just hang out and see how it works out.
I like it. Petting the company squirrel. Craig, how you doing, my friend?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. I'm kind of worried there. You didn't say fabulous.
Oh, it's fabulous, darling.
There we go. That's the Craig I know. And we have the lovely Sarah Belt. How are you?
I'm grand.
Grand, you say?
Grand, I do say.
Okay. Tea and crumpets, anyone?
A little late.
Greg, how you doing there?
Good evening, everybody. Doing well. Back from the trip that wasn't. We'll get there. Good cigar. One of my favorite wines out of your cellar. Hopefully the wife doesn't find out. It's a good night.
It's not to 2012, so I think we're okay.
Oh, good.
Speaking of which, we are enjoying something from the good people at Amador Cellars over in Amador County in Plymouth. It is a 2013 Rocky Point Zinfandel, and it's very robust, very fruit-forward. Although, if you've had the 2012 Rocky Point, you will swear you've seen God, and I am not exaggerating.
I don't remember. Which one did you give me?
I think you got the 13. You haven't 13? Had the 12 yet.
Yeah, this is really good. A very nice, as he said, fruit-forward wine, very jammy, sweet, very pleasant, great wine.
What you smoking there, Greg?
So, no jokes from the peanut gallery, please. Smoking the Wild Hunter tonight. It's Oscar Valladares' cigar. Yeah, that's right. Snicker, everybody. Go ahead.
I'm not going to snicker. It's not funny. Although that's you should okay. be smoking the non-hunter.
I should be smoking
the
non-hunter. The
cheeseburger in the fast food line.
Oh. Hey, you know, whatever works, man. Whatever works. So, it's a natural wrapper. It's a Honduran natural. It has not been Maduro'd. Binder and filler is also Honduran. It's beautifully smooth. It's a great stick. I don't think I've ever had anything from Oscar that's missed. It's very quickly becoming my go-to cigar in our humidor here at Tobacco Republic.
Very nice. I myself, I am smoking the Roma Craft Crow Magnum. I was originally going to smoke the Perdomo Champagne. I hadn't smoked it in a long time. I think the last one I had was about 4 years ago, and got it in a grab bag. It was like finding an old friend, but didn't think it paired well with the wine. So this is a Maduro wrapper, and I think it complements the wine well. How about you, Bob? What you smoking there, my friend?
I am smoking Tabacusa. Which is a Rocky Patel stick. It has a San Andreas wrapper and Nicaraguan binder and Nicaraguan filler, notes of cedar and leather, and we will be doing a review on this shortly.
My man, I like it. Lou, what you smoking?
All right. Well, I am smoking a San Cristobal Revelation. This is actually the fourth in an installment from San Cristobal. It was made for Ashton by Pepin Garcia, and it's of my father's cigar line in Estili, Nicaragua. The origin of this is obviously Nicaraguan. It's a full-strength cigar. The wrapper's Ecuadorian Sumatra seed with a binder and filler that's also from Nicaragua. So I am hoping that this gives me everything I need, as they've talked about this being a very special blend of cigar, as the wrapper leaf is the Ecuadorian Sumatra, which is from the mid-priming of the plant. And it's used in most of the Ashton's famous VSG lines. So as we get into more of the review of the notes, we'll be able to tell you a little bit more about this as we get to that segment.
All right. Now stop writing your manifesto, Unabomber, and tell us what you're smoking.
I went to the Comfort cigar for me. I went with the House Stick here, which is a Yardstick, is the Tobacco Republic House line, and went with the Connecticut, which is just one of my go-to cigars. It's just smooth. It's always a good draw. It's always a good smoke, and I just wanted something tonight that I could count on. Didn't want to have to work at it. Didn't want to have to put a lot of thought into it, and I love these things. I smoke probably 4 or 5 a week, so they're just a great stick.
All right, I have some of those in my humidor myself. Sarah, what are you smoking?
I'm smoking the Don Pepin Cuban Classic, a recommendation from our in-house tobacconist. It's Nicaraguan binder and filler, and a Corojo wrapper. Theoretically, it should go very nicely with our wine tonight.
What do you think of the wine? Have you sampled it yet?
The wine is amazing.
2013 was a great year for Zens.
It absolutely was. Amador out here in Northern California is known for Zinfandels. You can get some wonderful wines from many of the wineries out there. I mean, hell, you could throw a rock and you're going to hit a winery. And you can't go wrong with hardly any of them. They're well known for their Zins and especially their ports. Quite nice.
Sarah, is the Cuban Classic is the black label. Is that correct? It's what we call the black label. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Craig, what are you smoking, my friend?
I'm smoking the Barabas by Cuba Rica, and it tastes like smoking happiness. It's a nice Habano wrapper, real rich, medium, earthy, woody, spicy. Just a great cigar. Incredibly smooth.
I've had the Barabas myself. It is quite nice. It's one of those that's definitely a treat, not something I'd smoke every day, but one of those times when you want to treat yourself and you don't want to go all the way up to, say, a Byron.
Well, you know, it's certainly becoming a treat now. Unfortunately, I believe the line is going away.
Indeed.
Okay.
All right. Well, Greg, you weren't with us on the last taping.
Oh, do we really have to recount this again?
Yeah, I want to hear all about this. Elmer Fudd here decided to go hunting last week. So he was absent but missed. And tell us about your hunting trip.
So all of these guys, for the listeners out there, would all testify opening weekend of deer season is by far as I'm concerned, the most important weekend of the year. It should be a national holiday. That being said, this year's did not go as planned. My parents and I went and bought a tent trailer for us and planned to go up and meet some friends up on the mountain where we were going to go hunt about 7,000 foot level here in the Sierras. And when we went and checked the road out, it wasn't that bad. There were a couple of ruts that are normally there. They weren't that deep. Wasn't a big deal. That was pretty close to a month and a half ago. When we went up there last weekend, opening weekend, I'm towing my tent trailer behind me. You know, I got two hunting buddies in the truck behind me. I go over the rut, and the front wheels go down on the Expedition. And I went, oh, crap, because we went down about 2 feet instead of going down about 8 inches. Back wheels go down. all I hear is the trailers going over that rut is ka-ting! Left front stabilizer jack was ripped off the trailer. At this point, I can't move. I can move. I can only go one direction forward to get to where I can turn around. Hunting's over because the trailer can't be stabilized, and I'm not staying in a tent when it's going to snow. It's not going to happen. So I finally get up there, get to a spot where I can turn the trailer around, head back home. In the exact same spot, I take out the right rear as well. And fortunately, that was all that really broke. They're easily repairable. I got one repaired now, and Larry across the way from me is going to help me with the other one this weekend, so I can hopefully get up for the remaining 3.5 weeks of deer season and see if I can make my first win against the deer, because right now I'm 7-0.
That would be 0-7, but
who's counting? Oh, 0-7, okay.
The deer are 7-0.
The deer are 7-0, yes. Well, you know, the sad part is, you know, I've started out late, so it's kind of one of those things where it's like I'm learning as I go, and one of these days I'll be victorious and there'll be venison in my freezer, but other than that, that's kind of the weekend that wasn't.
Right now we have 1,250 on the deer.
Safe bet.
We'll have deer meat at your funeral. They would say Greg will finally has gotten his deer.
I'm going to bury him with one of them wicker lawn ornaments.
That might work.
You know, I have one of those for Christmas if you'd like to stock that.
I don't think your neighbors would be very happy about a rifle blast going off in the middle of the day.
Get that in one of those cheap RC cars, we could chase him around the neighborhood.
And the deer would still win.
Get him an inflatable deer with gloves and Velcro.
I don't know. I just had a vision of the deer being his pallbearers.
That's a hell of a Santa sleigh picture.
If you can teach one to talk, have one give my eulogy. It should be a riot.
Well, let's get down to the smoky smoke and get to some topics here regarding cigars. I want to talk a little bit about cigar reviews. I think we've all seen them in publications and the internet, of course, and, you know, the various ratings. And I want to talk to our resident cigar reviewer, Bob, and get his perspective on that and have a little discussion. Bob, you want to take it from here?
Sure. You know, I think we all read them. And the other day I was asking myself, why? And so I kind of like to go around the room and get some ideas on why do we read cigar reviews?
You bring up a good point, because a lot of it, and this is just my opinion, it's all marketing. When you get past the fundamentals of what the cigar would or should taste like, you know, there are a lot of distinct things that are said about a cigar that, you know, as we smoke them, we kind of look for that flavor note. I think, you know, from our discussions that we've had amongst each other, you know, a lot of it can be subliminal. Where if I tell you that the cigar smokes like a latte, you're going to start thinking latte flavor, and you might come out with that. But then again, there's also, what do you get on your tongue? And then what do you get if you retrohale? Two different flavor profiles from either one of those two things. But, yeah, it's amazing how so many cigars have similar descriptions of what they would taste like. And so what are we getting from all of that as we read this? Are we truly getting what the person who's reviewed or the panel that's reviewed these cigars are saying about it, or are we getting something else? And, again, do we care?
Well, why are we doing it? Why are we reading them?
Well, it's entertainment, for one.
I got to come in and agree with Lewis on that. It is quite entertaining, because I'm never quite sure when they start saying they're picking these flavors out, and it's normally not the basics like coffee or chocolate or something like that. It's these odd flavors. You know, we were passing a cigar review podcast around. We're not going to mention who, but we were passing one around between us the last week or so. And one of the flavor profiles they came up with was Thousand Island Dressing. And I'm sitting here going, what the? That doesn't even make sense. So I do think, for me, it's the entertainment value. Because as we were discussing on Wednesday night, you know, I take the word of you guys as my friends. And how you feel about the cigar is usually more with more weight than I do the review itself.
And see, that's where I agree with you. I don't really look at cigar reviews. I barely scan over them. They have no value to me, and I'm not trying to sound like the above it all art student at the university saying I'm above all this, but they don't do anything for me. I mean, whether it be entertainment or information, I go by, I'm very fortunate to have a large group of friends who smoke cigars who will turn me on to something. For instance, Greg turned me on to a few things a couple weeks ago that I never would have thought of, and he hasn't steered me wrong yet. For instance, this Cro-Magnum I'm smoking.
Okay, Scott. Now, in fairness, guys, how many of you have bought the cigar of the year?
I did. I bought 2 years ago.
Oh, raising my hand doesn't work.
Yeah. Unless Stevie Wonder is watching, no. Here comes the hate mail.
Yeah, you get cigar of the year, and you get all these, you know, perfunctory ratings, right? And so you would think that a 94 rated cigar is going to be better than an 88. And as we discussed, you know, a couple of days ago, a cigar that's rated a 94 or better this year, next year, it's in the 80s. And so, again, does it really matter what they're rating it, or does it matter how much you enjoy that cigar?
But as we discussed, I think those ratings do the cigar smoker a disservice, because you'll get a group of people who will say, I will smoke nothing that's rated less than a 90. And let me tell you, you are missing out on a lot of cigars that are considered quote-unquote 80s, maybe even 70s, although I've never seen a 70s in a certain publication. It's usually around 82, 84, and whatnot. But if you're restricting yourself to just a rating alone and not actually experiencing the cigar journey yourself, trying out different sticks, kind of leaving your comfort zone, because for me, I used to smoke nothing but Connecticut's, and Corojo, and, you know, Maduro scared me. It's like, ooh, that's way too strong. I don't think I want to deal with that. And then when I started getting into some of the Maduros, they turned out being very smooth, different flavors than I experienced. And, you know, it just enhanced my cigar journey.
Agreed. I think that, you know, I think it would be naive to say we don't rely at all on cigar reviews.
Granted.
At the same time, I think that I would say you kind of need to proceed with caution. Recognize that flavors are essentially associations, and there's a lot of subjectivity that goes into it. And right. I think as Lewis and I were talking earlier, noting the difference between, for example, coffee and dark chocolate.
Right.
It's an association that a person makes, and in some cases, you know, maybe somebody has a great palate, incredible palate. Maybe there is a lot of active imagination. And I'll just give you from one cigar review I was reading this week. It talks about on the cold draw, sweet chocolate, barnyard, redwood, some cinnamon, and a touch of pepper. I'm sorry, that wasn't the cold draw. That was just smelling the stick. Now, how someone can get that much out of smelling this thing is beyond me.
Yeah.
So we go to the draw, and we have orange and barbecue over earthiness and herbal flavors at medium to full. Then it goes on to talk about charred chicken, minerals, and toastiness. And to me, the reality is we're never going to experience that. And I think that comes back to a lot of these are written with entertainment value, I think, in mind.
Yeah.
I get that medium well with a side salad.
Yeah. I just have to interject here. Who's doing a review? A Doberman?
Do you want to supersize that? But do you get all of that? I mean, obviously, this saying is very complex. And at what point? Is that from when you first light the cigar, or throughout the process of smoking that cigar that you're getting all of this? And again, when I think about the review that, you know, all the many reviews that are out there, is like, what value add does a lot of this have for me? I am one, I don't select my cigars based on anyone else's review. I might look at a cigar and see where it's coming from, what the binder and the filler are, and the wrapper for that point, and then I'll make a decision whether or not I want to smoke that cigar. But, you know, Barnyard, No, that's going to be a turnoff for me. I don't want to. I know what a barn smells like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then we had another one where they said it was roasted chicken and barbecue. It's like, really? I'd rather have a meal. I don't want to smoke a cigar that's going to have me tasting notes of roasted chicken and barbecue.
But if you do that, Lewis, then you don't have to eat.
Well, this
it's a great
is true.
Weight loss.
Just, and I don't even have to put the cigar nub down. I can just chew on it.
Yeah, looking around the room, it's a great weight loss program.
Yeah.
But I...
It was Sarah excluded, of course, because she turned sideways. We can't see her.
But recognize a lot of the associations that we make are not based on taste, right?
Right.
When we talk about cedar, we're talking about essentially the smell of your empty humidor,
right?
Right. So we're taking a smell and associate and making an association with the taste of it. When we talk about leather, what do we mean? Are you smelling a leather jacket, or are you remembering what it was like to chew on those little ties of your baseball glove?
Funny you bring that up.
I've seen references to spices I've never heard of before. That review that I was reading from, one of the flavors that it mentioned was chartreuse.
Yeah.
And in fairness, I didn't realize that was a liqueur.
I didn't either.
I was wondering if it really tasted yellow green.
Yeah, you're smoking angel dust.
Yellow green, what?
Never mind.
Greg. But at the end of the day, you're getting one person's perspective on
true,
that
precisely.
Cigar. Precisely. And I think, you know, you talked about people who will only smoke cigars that are rated 90 and above. You're looking at a subjective number, and a lot of things go into the calculation of that number. And I think the difference between an 88 and a 92 is within the margin of error.
Yeah.
And so I think that becomes problematic when that becomes your criteria.
Yeah.
Another thing that I look at is environmental factors that can affect it. What are you pairing it with? If I'm drinking coffee, am I going to get coffee flavors out of that? If the grass has just been cut, am I going to get grassy flavors out of it? I had a funny thing happen when I was working on a review the other day. I had this really unique flavor come out, and I thought, what the hell is that?
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened is some of the ash from my cigar had dropped on the paper I was writing on, and what I was getting was notes of burnt yellow paper and cardboard. It was quite interesting. So I think you got to take that into consideration. How is the reviewer smoking it? I retrohale almost every puff that I take on a cigar. The notes that you get, I think we've talked before, that a lot of you guys, most of the flavor you're getting is actually through the aroma. Unlike Greg, who coughs through the retrohale, if I try to smell the aroma, I will start coughing. So the notes that I'm going to get on the retrohale are very, very different than the ones that you're going to get on your palate or through your nose by smelling the aroma. And I had an experience, again, I was doing it, working on a different review, and I was clearly getting leather, earthy notes on the stick, and I did catch a whiff of the aroma, and it was coffee.
Mm.
So sort of in the same flavor profile, but a very different flavor. So I think you have to keep that in mind. So, you know, how do you look at this? You know, if you're really looking to make a purchasing decision, for God's sake, don't buy a box, right? And I think a lot of people do that with the cigar of the year, right? You got to go out and get a box of it.
I did it.
Yeah, you did, and I smoked one out of it, and it was good.
Yeah, it was good.
I don't know if I'd smoke it again, but it was good.
No, I'd definitely smoke it again, but it definitely wasn't cigar of the year.
And I can tell you from my experience, Bob, when I first started smoking, I went off of a review, not knowing any better, and I bought a box. And Craig and I, by the end of it, had both not wanted to smoke that cigar ever again because I bought a box instead of buying a couple of sticks to try.
Well, and that's a whole different discussion we should have at some point, which is how are you going to buy your cigars and rotations and things like that.
Right.
But I'd look at it and I'd say if you're really going to going to base a purchase on it, compare multiple reviews. You'll get a greater sense of reliability, and you'll be able to take stock of the variability. Make sure the notes that they're talking about generally are within your personal
palate. Yeah, what
yeah
you
what's
like?
Your personal flavor profile? Because that's really the key. You know, is it complex? Are you seeing either layering in that stick from the person who's reviewing it, or are you seeing changes in flavors along the way? You know, the other thing, be careful about generalizing one size to another. I have had, I can think of two sticks in particular, one in which I loved the Robusto, didn't care for, I'm at a loss for words
the
here.
The Perfecto, Bob.
But the Perfecto, right. Thank you, Greg. And in another case, I loved the Perfecto, couldn't stand the Robusto. So if somebody's reviewing a Churchill, don't assume that that same review would apply to the flavors that you get in a Corona or a Lancero. So I think that those are helpful hints if you're going to use it. The other is keep score. If there are some reviewers that tend to have your flavor profile that you see reliability, put greater stock in those than in other reviewers that don't seem to have that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that still factor into that, I would say, Bob. Ultimately, if you're going to try to make a decision on what cigar may be in your wheelhouse, don't buy a box. Just try a stick and try various sizes and types just to see if that's in your particular wheelhouse, because it may not be. And that reviewer has a different palate than you do. And so, you know, you want to, and I was guilty of that, you know, first starting out smoking a cigar and buying a box and then realizing halfway through the box, I don't like the cigar anymore, you know, because it wasn't really in my wheelhouse and my palate was developing and changing over time as well. And so I think it's a better idea to just go out to your neighborhood brick and mortar, get a stick, sit down, and smoke a variety of things before you make a decision on buying a box and find out if this is what you enjoy versus what you've read in a review.
I think that's good advice. I think the other thing is, if you're not crazy about the review and you don't smoke that particular size,
right,
don't assume that you won't like the size that you generally smoke.
Exactly.
I'm loving this perspective right here. And I got to tell you, Bob, I envy the fact that you can retrohale, because every time I do, I feel like I'm putting my respiratory system on a craps table.
I second that.
It's like, here goes nothing. And it's like, I just kind of shudder. If I see a Maduro, it's like, oh, no, not retrohaling that. Hey there, Craig. What's your perspective on the whole review issue?
I don't read cigar reviews at all. Most of the time when I look at a review, it's just somebody says, hey, what's that? What's this wrapper leaf? And I'm like, I have no idea. Pull out the phone, get a review that says what the wrapper binder filler is, and that's mainly what I use them for. I mean, I don't believe a complex opinion can be represented numerically, so I'm not a big fan of numbers to represent what something tastes like, because like you've said, taste is subjective.
Yeah, I feel you. But, I feel you.
Yeah, I don't. I see the reason for them, because they're fun. They can be useful. Like Bob said, find somebody who has your palate, who you agree with on the taste, if you're looking for interest in cigars, because we're not always going to agree. And a problem I have a lot in here is somebody will say, I want this cigar because it has this rating. It's really good. And then you find out that they only smoke Maduros, but what they want is a Connecticut based off of the rating. And they smoke and they don't like it because they never smoke Connecticuts. So you gotta take that with a grain of salt sometimes. If you're not used to it or you don't smoke it regularly, you're probably not going to enjoy it. But you got to try it sometimes.
And see, this is where I, again, emphasize the value of the brick and mortar, because you can actually talk to folks in the shop and get an idea of something that you want to smoke, someone who's close to your flavor profile, who can recommend something if you're at a loss, or as I come in here ever so often and I ask Craig, hey, Craig, find me something interesting. And it's all a part of the cigar journey.
And I think the review is just another part of that journey. I tend to agree with Craig. I could care less what somebody else thinks about the cigar. I really do. I'm looking for the same thing he's looking for. How's it put together? You know, what tobaccos are in it? What kind of wrappers it got? What kind of fillers it got?
I will read down and see if somebody talks about how it draws, how it burns. I could care less about, you know, oh, I get a chocolate flavor. No, you don't.
Larry, I'll tell you, I'll give you an example of where you got to be careful with that. And it's a review I think that we are in the process of posting, which is...
Yes, we are.
Which is an Oliva Connecticut Reserve. And Nicaraguan binder, Nicaraguan filler, Connecticut, Ecuadorian Connecticut wrapper. It's actually a fairly mild to medium cigar. So if you went, the Connecticut might give you some sense that it was going to be lighter, but you would tend to think just because it was Nicaraguan that it would be stronger than it really is. And so I think that reviews can help you with things like that. But
I use it to just point me in a direction and then, you know, try to, you know, find your own palate from there. And I agree with Scott 100%. It's a great thing about a brick and mortar, especially a shop like this one that has a really nice selection. You can go in and you can decide you're at an evening there, an afternoon, that you want to go completely out of your wheelhouse. There's absolutely some fantastic cigars that are going to be completely 100% away from your norm and let you try it. And it's a great thing.
And find a tobacconist you can trust.
Exactly.
Yep. The old saying goes, if you don't know cigars, know your cigar tobacconist.
All right, so I guess, you know, in conclusion, how do we use the cigar reviews? Sparingly.
I think, as Larry said, they're a piece of the puzzle.
They're a piece of the puzzle, exactly.
Yeah, I like this conversation because before we really discussed this, like I said, I pretty much rejected reviews. But, you know, the way you went about it, Bob, I like that perspective, finding someone who, you know, smokes cigars within your real wheelhouse and whose reviews you can trust or you pretty much align with. Don't worry about the number, just worry, you know, how they're discussing it, the flavors, if you can sample the flavors. Again, I'm one of those who doesn't really retrohale very sparingly, and I just get it off the aroma of the cigar, and that's my enjoyment.
Yeah, because there can be a lot of stuff out there that in a review that will really throw you off, especially if you look at the flavor wheel, if you will, with all the different spices. Yeah. And I don't know that I want to smoke a cigar and get a taste of cumin.
Chinese five spice comes to mind.
You know, it's funny, Louis, because I think we've looked at that wheel together and we've kind of scratched our heads and saying, I don't even understand what that thing is.
No.
Especially if you look at spices. It's such a broad category, and that's why, you know, if I can recognize something as a particular spice, I'll say that.
Yeah.
If it's just hot, I'll tell you it's pepper.
Pepper.
And it's either mild pepper, medium pepper, or strong pepper. I don't even like the white, black, white, and red.
Yeah, crushed red, or white. Oh, wait, I think I got this cigar from India. I taste curry.
What a white pepper originating from the Andes.
Yeah, so, you know.
White pepper artisans.
I trust.
Sea salt.
Chilean sea salt. Yeah, I trust just using my own palate to determine whether or not I like the particular cigar that I'm smoking, and I leave it at that. But again, you know, there's some reason that they do this, right? Because a lot of people do rely on it, and some rely on it heavily because that's all they know, and they don't spend time talking to their local tobacconist to get some information, to be educated on what they're getting from the different tobaccos in the different regions and what that binder and that aging and the soil and that whole process. You know, those are the conversations you'd want to have if you so are inclined to get to know a little bit more about what you're smoking.
I would also, one of my takeaways is you benefit from sitting in the lounge with people on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That if you're just going into a shop, you're buying sticks and walking out, you're not getting the same benefit that you do from spending time in a lounge talking to people and getting a sense for their flavor profiles. I think all of us have a pretty good sense of what we smoke, what each of us smoke.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll go back to Scott's point. Which is, you know, I think generally we rely on each other, and sometimes we miss the mark. But I think generally we do a pretty good job of referring one another to particular sticks.
Yeah. Well, and I know in that case, like you and I, we have somewhat similar favorite profiles. And when I recommend the High Clear, which is one of my new favorites to you, it wasn't in your wheelhouse.
I love the flavors, but the pepper in it was too strong.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the retrohale.
That's the hard part, is that I pretty much, like for me, I pretty much got a handle on what everybody's going to smoke that's in here. But still, you never quite know, particularly if it's smoke unseen like the High Clear was.
But I still think it's the most reliable thing that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it is too.
Hey, Bob, let me ask you a question. When you smoked that first High Clear, that was at the end, basically the end of the Denver trip. How many cigars did you had over that 3-day period?
God, I don't even know.
I think I would venture to say 10? We're probably
talking 20 or
20.
Probably 20.
So here's a question for you to ponder. What if you would have done that High Clear, say, on a Wednesday evening in here on a regular week of smoking cigars?
I don't think it would have mattered, because it was really the pepper that was the problem.
The pepper is what did it for you. Okay. Yeah. Just a thought, you know, because mm-hmm. There's a couple of things that I smoked up there in Denver that I was like, ooh, I don't know. But I have more of them, and I've smoked two of those cigars since that I found a little more to be, you know, my type of cigar on a 2-cigar day as opposed to a 12-cigar day.
Well, and the order you smoke them in can make a huge difference too.
But that's a fine point that you bring up, Larry. You know, if you have 3, 4 or more cigars already on your palate and you're trying to come up with a review on a particular stick after that, you're not going to get what you would expect if it was your first cigar today.
I think that's a great point, Lewis, especially if you're going from stronger to weaker.
Yeah.
One of the things I would love to talk about is cigar reviewer methodology. Greg and I were talking about this earlier in the afternoon, and a certain reviewer, what they do is they smoke one stick in particular for 3 days, so one every day for 3 days to get a perspective.
That's actually how Half Wheel goes through their process.
It was Half Wheel, gotcha.
Yes, it was.
All right, well, switching gears here, and we are going to attempt to do this as adult as possible, but forgive me if we go blue.
Or start snickering.
Yeah. Let's talk about cigar sizes, and does size matter?
Of course size matters, and nobody likes a small cup of coffee.
All right, Sarah, since you just chimed in, you're on. Talk to me.
Well, like many things in what I like, it totally depends on my mood. Aw, damn it.
Swing and a miss.
Size matters. You can't get to the UK in a rowboat. Just saying.
You don't know that.
All righty then.
But it's a hell of a row. Let's try again. Sarah?
Oh, man. So it depends. I usually will go for generally a Robusto, sometimes up to a Churchill. It depends on how much time I have, what beverage I'm drinking with it. Those are two main factors. No, I'm not going to go for the crazy, what do we call them?
The time suck?
Well, not even the time suck. The words fail me tonight. Yeah, no, I got nothing.
Okay. Well, would you say it would be a safe statement to make that depending on the type of cigar, because we're not just talking length of cigar, we're talking about the ring gauge itself.
Right.
And that varies in the same line, because you can have a Lancero or a Panatella, however you want to look at it, and then you can have a 38 or a 52 ring gauge in that same line, and it'd be totally different.
Absolutely. But it also goes to what Bob was saying before, like with reviews.
Right.
You could like a particular cigar in a particular size and mm-hmm. then try it in a different size and it does nothing for you. Right. So that also depends as well.
I think it comes down to the relationship between the wrapper, the right. binder, and the filler. And the smaller that ring gauge, the stronger flavors you're going to get out of particularly that wrapper, but also the binder.
Right.
And I think maybe, Craig, you can talk to us about the characteristics of different wrappers that, and we're not talking about music here, we're still sticking with cigars, about the flavor quality of particular wrappers, what you get out of them.
Well, when you talk about a cigar wrapper, so you take a Corojo seed, you can grow it anywhere. Depending on where you grow it, it'll have different flavors. To me, it's typically very floral or a little woody. Good, a little bit sweet, and the older it gets, the more mellow it gets, the more floral it gets, and the sweeter it gets. And then when you have, like when they take the bag from the hanging process and they roll it into a cigar, and then they age it, they lay them all down, and then from that process, the flavors kind of marry together, and it changes the taste a little bit because of that. So it gets a lot more complicated when we talk about that. Then you talk about a Habano or a Cameroon. To me, they're a little similar. They're very earthy, woody tastes. It's like cedar might be a way to describe the Habano over woody. And then you have something like a Criollo, which is rather creamy, very earthy. You know, if you don't, earthy is my term for dirt and compost, so we all know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you have something like a Sumatra, which I describe as very floral, a little bit earthy. Then you can go with something like an Oscuro, which is a really dark, really rich, really strong wrapper. And depending on how old it is, it could also be nice and creamy as well. So it gets really complicated when you delve into that process.
Can you talk about Maduros a little bit?
Okay, so Maduro means mature. It's an extra aging process. And what they do is they, after they hang it, they pack it into this brick. And they have this... If these bricks that they stack into this cube and they put a thermometer in the center, and when the temperature reaches a certain temperature, they unstack it and they restack it with new bricks in the center. It's essentially composting it to get that dark, dark wrapper and that sweetness to come out from the cigar. And that's what you get from the Maduros. They're typically stronger and sweeter because of that.
And, you know, can I add to something on when we talk about sizes, and you probably know more than I do, because I haven't been working in the shop for a while now, but the larger the ring gauge of the cigar, the more filler they have to add to increase in that ring gauge. For example, the 60 ring gauge of, say, the LFD Digger, or even the 85 ring gauge of Oscar's Woody, and that tends to, with not being an exception to the rule, but it tends to mellow out the strong flavor that you're used to compared to, say, if you took that LFD Digger and rolled it in a Lancero size.
Right, so the strongest flavor out of a cigar is going to be the wrapper. And the filler's job, not that it doesn't have flavor, it's a much more mild flavor. Its job is to mellow out the cigar and marry the flavors together. So the thicker the ring gauge, the more filler you have, so it's going to be milder, it's going to be a little more creamier. Or if you go with the Lancero, which has very little filler, you're going to get a whole lot more of that wrapper, and it's going to be much stronger. So if you're somebody who likes a lot of flavor, you should smoke Lanceros, Coronas, or Lonsdales. The thinner the ring gauge, the better.
Right.
So it's pretty much ratioed from wrapper to filler, which hence is why you're getting a lot of flavor out of the Lancero. I myself, when I started out, I smoked a lot of Churchills. And as I got a little more educated as I could get, and got introduced to the Lanceros by the proprietor here, I started smoking them, and then I got educated again. Greg, go ahead, because you're chomping at the bit for this story.
Oh, let's bring this story up again. Why not? So there's different Tobacco Republic locations. There's Tobacco Republic, West Roseville, Orangevale, Penryn, Auburn, depending on whose house we're smoking at. And so we're sitting at Scott's place, and he and I are smoking Cohiba Lanceros that he had liberated somewhere. And... So he pulls these two out, and he and I both cut and light at the same time. So I'm a third of the way through my cigar, and we're a half an hour in. At a half an hour mark, he's done telling me he's going to get another cigar. And I'm like, "What? What's wrong with you?" And he's like, "Well, what do you mean?" I'm like, "Go get that same cigar and put an hour and a half into it, not 30 minutes, because I learned this from the proprietor many years ago when he gave me this beautiful Lancero, which turned out to be the Don Bonino. I sucked that thing down in a half an hour. And he goes, okay, now I want you to do this again. He did the same thing to me. Gave me the same stick, said, I want you to put 90 minutes into it. And did it not, Scott, change the flavor?
It absolutely did.
Speaking of Lancero, what are you lighting up?
This is a Gran Habano Corojo number 5.
Fantastic cigar by George Rico.
Yes, Scott it Robinson, is. Our resident expert on sucking real good.
I think the strength of the cigars is why the strength of the size is why I tend towards Robustos and Toros and Churchills rather than Lanceros, because they generally on the retrohale are just too strong for me. I think the Perfecto and the Figurado are unique from the standpoint that generally I think you can get a complexity that you don't have in the other sizes, because you're having variation in the amount of filler relative to the wrapper and the binder.
I think I have to agree with you, Bob, because particularly the two you mentioned, the Figurado and the Perfecto, the cigar is shaped like an elongated egg. So you start out with a small ring gauge toward the middle to a larger ring gauge, back to a small ring gauge again. And it does add complexity and, in some cases, strength in that shape as well.
Agreed.
Also, don't confine yourself to a specific size. When I got started, I tend to gravitate towards larger ring gauges because I'm a decent-sized guy, and I looked funny holding a Lancero. It just looked weird to me. I got big paws and a little Lancero. I felt like I needed to be sticking my pinky out. And to this day, I still tend to do more larger ring gauge cigars than not. But, you know, try something out. If you got a go-to stick that you like in a certain size, go a size up or a size down in the same type of stick and see what the differences are. You may be surprised. You may find something that you already like that you're going to like better in a different size.
You know what? You just touched upon one of my newest pet peeves. I was doing some research this week on cigar sizes and listening to certain cats and, you know, reviewing some of their writings and videos. And a couple of the worst ones were the, let's just say, I'm using this term loosely, tobacconist, no disrespect to Craig, who sat there in the humidor and said, you know, you're going to look a little funny smoking, like, for example, a Lancero or a Purito, something small. So, you know, that's why I would recommend a Churchill, because, you know, you look good smoking that. If you got someone who tells you that, run for the bloody hills, because it's all about flavor and you're missing out on a lot of good cigars. No one in a cigar shop is going to look at you funny based on the size of your cigar. It's just not going to happen. They'll ask you how it is, but it's not going to be like, you're smoking a sissy cigar. At that point, the rest of the patrons of the lounge will probably pounce upon that person.
Usually they will. And it really does make a difference, you know, depending on your mood and your particular want and desire of that present moment, that dictates the size of your cigar more than it does as a fashion accessory.
Yeah, I would agree. And then, you know, if someone were to be that callous in trying to put you into a cigar, they're leaving out a whole line of cigars that I call tweeners. These are your 4 to 3.75 in length cigars that if you only have 30 minutes, and you want to get that smoke in, those are great size cigars. So, you know, why would you not want to smoke one and you're still going to get the same flavor, you know, that you would from a longer cigar in that particular cigar brand. The other thing, too, is that, you know, let's not forget, and I think we learned a lesson about a year ago from a roller who said it was important, too, in how the filler itself, was placed in the rolling of that cigar. You know, so based on how his technique was that he flipped the tobacco so that you would wind up with the stronger side of that tobacco. When you light it, you get all that flavor, and then all that feeds up into the end. I believe I got that correct. But that made yes. that made a lot of sense to me, because, you know, if you ever light a cigar and you get a lot of light white ash immediately, that means you're losing a lot of that flavor. And so, you know, with all that we're talking about, aside from, you know, how much filler and binder is used, and then the wrapper being the topping for that cigar, it also depends on the technique of the blender and the roller of that particular cigar. That can change a whole lot for you. I know I've smoked some cigars after he, you know, mentioned that, and I don't think we can mention his name right now, but I realized that what he said was true. You know, I got more flavor, more richness from that cigar as it got closer and closer to that, you know, final 2 inches to an inch and a half. And it was wonderful. It was a great smoking experience. So those things we got to factor in, too, with picking out a cigar.
Now, not slamming the Churchill, because I still enjoy an occasional Churchill. But from what I read, you know, people were speaking on, you know, smoking a Churchill, it's great. But as you get towards the end of the cigar, because of the length of time you're smoking it and the redundancy, it tends to feel like it's getting stronger, which it probably isn't, or maybe it is. It just depends on the cigar. But some of the judgments I make on the size of cigar is how much time I have. I'm one of those lucky ducks who works from home and has a nice little balcony outside my office. So if I've got 15, 20 minutes to a conference call, there's no way I'm pulling out a Robusto and trying to power smoke it, or, you know, even worse, smoke part of it and it's not done, and then let it sit for, you know, 2 or 3 hours. You don't want to do that. So I do the lunch break. It's a smaller cigar. I enjoy it. And, you know, it's just enough time to smoke, and then I can put it, you know, it's done, and I can go about my business.
And I think lately, over the last several years, we've seen more cigars produced in larger ring gauges and shorter lengths
yeah.
to accommodate that.
Right.
You know, I would echo what Lewis said, that there are times, even though I tend towards Robustos, Toros, Churchills, you know, if I've got a half an hour, I may pull out a Corona.
Yeah.
And the reality is if you know, if you spend the time trying different sticks, you will find something that fits your flavor profile in a smaller ring gauge
exactly.
or a larger ring gauge.
Yeah.
I think that's entirely true. And you're right, Bob. A lot of the cigar manufacturers are coming out now with the 3.75 to 4.5 inch. Gran Habano's got a large line. Oliva, through their Nub brand, has a line like that. And it really does give you the option of choosing your time wisely. And there's the other option, too, which Larry brought up earlier, the cigar he's smoking now. The yardstick, you know, when you've got a yardstick, and it's lovingly named that by the proprietor because of it's typically something for a yard work or something like that. You've got a high-quality stick at a very reasonable price point that if something does happen, you don't mind letting that go out. And I can speak for myself. I can't speak for Larry. But on the relight, they're very good. Even if it does go out and I have to relight it, it's still a good cigar.
Okay.
No, that's absolutely true. And that's what got me kind of steered that direction in the first place. Because, sort of like Scott, I don't work from home, but it's my own gig, so I do what I want. And I roll in first thing in the morning, and I'm smoking a cigar before I leave the driveway. And I will go through just about any decent-sized cigar in the morning before, you know, the doors open to the public. So, yeah, I enjoy these. For that simple reason, if I have to put it down and I have to be hands-on and not have a cigar, you know, right there with me, yeah, it's no problem. I do 15, 20 minutes without it and pick it back up and relight it, and it's a great stick to relight. And if not, if I throw it away, then, you know, I don't feel bad about that either.
Yeah, you're not out of $20. It's like,
yeah. But, you know, you're talking about smoking in the truck. I think that's a great segue for our next topic, to smoke or not to smoke in your car.
Yes.
That was
I'm smoking
easy.
In my car. It's just, you know, fortunately for you and Scott, and to a certain extent Lou, you don't have the 9-to-5 going into the office every day with that. So there's nothing I like better than not necessarily on my way to work, because I don't want to be interfacing with the public smelling like a cigar. But on my way home, there's nothing better than relaxing, sitting in the car for a second, taking the step to cut and light my cigar, and then making my way home. Mind you, it's only half an hour, but I can still get a nice lunch break in and be done by the time I get home and just let the day drain away. So, I mean, for me, smoking in the car, it's always a yes. And as you guys know, because you've all ridden with me, it's open season. Light it up and let's go wherever we're going.
Yeah, well, I'm one who used to be a road warrior. And I used to smoke going to work and coming home from work. And it set the tone for me in the morning. You know, when I get into the office, I was very relaxed. You know, nothing that anyone did in the office. You know, my staff would run to me. It was nothing that was a three-alarm fire for me, because I'm relaxed. I'm calm. I had a nice cigar. And despite all the road rage that I see others having, I just puff a smoke out the window, out the sunroof. I'm good to go. I'm not frustrated about the commute. It kind of helped me get through that, going and coming. So, and it depends on the vehicle that I'm in. Obviously, you know, if it's one that I've already broken in, yes, I'm smoking. But, you know, I have a newer vehicle, I'm not smoking in it. Because I don't want all of that smoke to set into the leather and then get into the, you know, head cover. It's like, no, we're not going to do that. It pains me not to. But, you know, I think, you know, if you have a reasonable detailing place that you can go to, you know, it's better than having cigarette smoke in your car.
Amen to that.
I didn't have a problem reselling one of the cars that I used to smoke in. The guy said, as a matter of fact, they loved the smell, even though they had to get it out to then resell it. But it wasn't like cigarette smoke.
And I don't know about for you, Lewis, but I find for mine, in my vehicle, it's typically not the seats that I have to worry about. It's my headliner that's usually where the smell gets trapped in.
Yeah, but I found a beautiful carpet cleaning solution that takes that right out. So that kind of works.
Well, do share.
I will.
And there are a variety of things online that will tell you different ways to try to get that smell removed. Having a convertible is nice.
Yeah.
I don't smoke with the top down. I may, particularly if I have someone who is a regular cigar smoker, you know, that may happen with
right.
top down. But I think, you know, you consider the people who are going to be riding in your car with you as well and how they react to having that smell in the car. Mm-hmm.
And see, that's my big thing. Like Lou, some years ago, back in the late 90s, I was a road warrior myself. I did the commute from South Sacramento to San Jose. And for those of you who don't know, that trip can be, and this is one way, it could be anywhere from about 2.5 hours to 4 or 5 hours, depending on the traffic, and usually it was bad. So on the way home, if you ever watched The Sopranos with Tony smoking a cigar from New York to Jersey, that was me. But, of course, at that time, I had a slightly older car, and it wasn't an issue. Now, at like Lou, I have a newer car, and I won't say I never smoke in it, but I'm almost paranoid to the point where I'm rolling the back windows down. I'm blowing the air through. I've got the air freshener on. So I think I can count on my fingers, if you chopped off two of them, how many times I've smoked in my car.
Yeah, but Larry, on the other hand.
Apparently, my socioeconomic status puts me in a different playing field than the rest of these folks. I'm driving a 2014 Ford pickup with vinyl seats, a plastic headliner, and no carpet. I will smoke anything in that truck. I don't care. It just, yeah. I mean, it's I got that thing specifically with the rubber floor mat, you know, because a job site, we're in and out of it. I didn't want to have to deal with cleaning the carpet. I didn't want a cloth or a fabric headliner. because I'm going to be smoking like a train in this thing. You know, I have to clean the back window about once a month with rubbing alcohol. That's the kind of smoking we're doing in this truck.
There you go.
And see, my wife's real sensitive to tobacco smoke. She was she's an ex-smoker, and she's like real sensitive to the smell of tobacco. And, you know, she gets in the car and she'll be like, "You were smoking in the car?" It's like, "I don't smell anything. What the hell?"
I'm with Larry. I drive a Jeep. Some of my windows I can't even see out of because I smoke in there so often.
Well, and even then, you know, it brings up an interesting subject that I'll touch on just briefly here. And it was an article I read as a hunter. To smoke or not smoke while you're hunting doesn't make a difference. And it's an interesting 50-50 mix like it is in here right now of some people do, some people don't. Since I'm 0-7, I'm still under the I'm not smoking yet. When I get a deer, we'll see.
Okay. So I guess, you know, the conclusion to this is based on what you're driving. And if you have certain passengers that may not be smokers, then you make a conscious decision right then and there. Say, well, I'm not going to smoke in the car today. But for those of you who are out there driving and you want to cut light and smoke a cigar and you're okay with it, you're not going to get in trouble with your spouse, light up. Because that's what I did. And as a matter of fact, for a while I didn't have a problem with my wife saying anything about me smoking in the car because she understood that's what kept me awake on the way home. You know, after a long day, 10, 12 hours in the office, I got a 2-hour drive back home. I'm smoking.
I love it. I love it. We've talked about some good stuff tonight. I think we've had a great show. Any closing thoughts from anyone?
As always, we ask that you please, when this gets posted up Monday morning, please like it. Please share it. Let us know. Give us some feedback. Drop us a line on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or email. Everything's on the website for you guys to see. Let us know what you're thinking. If you've got a particular topic in mind, send it to us. We're glad to talk about what you want to hear because, after all, it's a labor of love for all of us, and you guys want to hear something specific, then let us know. We'll talk about it for you. Yes, any other thoughts, guys?
No, I just want to feed off of what you just said because we get a lot of great feedback from certain listeners, but I would like to get some emails and comments about what they think. Give us some suggestions. We'll do a lot of research, get back to you. If we can't speak on it directly, we'll definitely get back to you and add it to the next segment. A lot of what we're doing tonight is what we do normally. And as we sit down and we have some good discussions about things in general, which is life. And then we talk a lot about cigars because, you know, we do share with each other. And that's what I like about being in an environment where fellow cigar smokers don't mind sharing. And there are times like with Greg, just the other day, you had to remind me that I gave you a particular cigar because once I give it to you, it's yours. I'm not trying to keep record of what I've handed you. I'm sharing because, you know, sharing is caring. And I think we all do a little bit of that and say, hey, man, I like this cigar. I think, and you touched on it a little bit, I think you might enjoy this. Smoke it, let me know. And if you don't, no, hey, no harm, no foul, right? It's not something that you like. But I'm thinking I got something that I enjoy that you might. And so we share. Other than that, support your local brick and mortar. You know, I know there's a lot of things you can go out there and order online, and we'll add that as a speaking point in another segment. But if you have a local brick and mortar, support them. That's how the doors stay open. And granted, you're going to meet a lot of wonderful people there. I've made some great associations and friends by coming into my local brick and mortar. And I love to see these doors stay open.
I would, too. It would be terrible if we had to disappear.
Thanks for the feedback. Sharing is caring there, Shamrock Bear.
Okay, Freddie, fabulous.
And let's not kid ourselves here, folks. This is a seriously PG watered-down version of what we're like in most instances in this shop.
Okay. Amen to that one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you, Larry. Hey, you know, no, but you're being honest.
Trying to keep it real.
Being honest.
If you listen to a few podcasts and you decide to roll into the shop, it's like, whoo! We may have stepped across a line. Yes, you have. Welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard.
Our favorite saying coming in here, if you got thin skin, you may not fit in.
That's right.
That's right. All right, Greg, take us home.
So I just want to say one more thing before we go. Thank you, everybody, for coming on tonight. Everybody's insightful comments are always welcome. And for you listeners out there, as we said, drop us an email. Our email address is beyondthehumidor@gmail.com. We hope to see you next time, and we'll be recording next week for you guys. Production notes have just come out, and we look forward to hearing from you. From all of us here at Beyond the Humidor, take care. Have a great night.